Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, May 28th. I'm Jordan Pangelinan, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, two small fires near Alder Point leave 200 without power. Southern Humboldt Vets hold impromptu groundbreaking ceremony as work begins on the rebuild of the John Haynes Memorial Hall. And Cal Poly Humboldt under investigation regarding anti-Semitism on campus. Stay tuned. News and those stories and more coming right up. Over 200 Southern Humboldt residents east of Garberville were without power this afternoon, following a 911 call that required a response from fire personnel. KMUD's Lauren Schmidt reports.
Two small fires in the Alder Point area were likely sparked by downed power lines, prompting a response from local volunteer fire departments and CAL FIRE. Jeremy Ward, battalion chief with CAL FIRE's Humboldt Del Norte unit, shared an overview of the incident with KMUD News.
Earlier today, there was a report of a vegetation fire in the Alder Point area, and our responding resources were alerted while responding that there was possibly power lines down in the area. Firefighters did arrive at scene and find one small fire initially, about 10 foot by 10 foot in size, and that had been extinguished by the homeowner. While they were there at scene, they later determined there had been a second fire in the same area, also related, and that fire was about 6 foot by 6 foot in size. So both pretty small fires. Fortunately, while the conditions and fuels were not very receptive, but we are looking at some warmer, drier, and windier weather coming up.
Both fires were quickly extinguished, but the battalion chief cautioned that if civilians come across a downed power line, they should always assume it is live.
We, as a department, always consider those lines as energized and very dangerous until the utility companies confirm to us that they are dead and grounded. So according to PG&E's website, they suggest maintaining at least 25 feet away from any downed power line. Our folks, we try and stay even further than that.
Energized downed power lines can jump or arc, which is extremely dangerous. When a power line is live and touches the ground, it can create a voltage gradient around the point of contact. This can cause electricity to travel through the ground, a hazard known as step potential. If a conductive object, like a tree limb, metal fence, or even wet ground is nearby, the current can arc or jump through the air towards it. Arcing can also occur if the line is moving, or if something or someone comes within close proximity, even without direct contact. And with peak fire season approaching, CAL FIRE is encouraging folks to be extra vigilant in preventing new fire starts.
Folks need to be considering the things that they're doing while they're out, either working or recreating or traveling through wildland areas. Because the majority of fires are human-caused, and a lot of times they're events that are preventable. So if folks remember the conditions, and especially as far as weather and things like that, they need to consider that in their actions and what they're doing and maybe think, okay, you know, maybe this isn't a good weekend for me to burn this burn pile. Maybe I can, you know, wait till another time where the winds are going to be less and the relative humidity will be higher and things like that. So, you know, the big thing is just consider what you're doing and think about how your action could have unintended consequences. So especially right now, like I said, this weekend, we're looking at some hot weather coming up, followed by some periods of wind across a number of counties. And wind is one of those ones that it can really impact a vegetation fire and cause fires to increase much larger in size than they would have without all that influence.
The National Weather Service in Eureka has issued a heat advisory spanning from Lake and Mendocino counties to Humboldt, Trinity, and areas further inland. Notably, just north of Humboldt in Siskiyou County, evacuation orders and warnings were issued about an hour before news time due to the juniper fire burning near Mount Shasta. It's another reminder that fire season is upon us, and hot weather and wind can quickly turn a small spark into a large incident. Helpful tips on how to prevent catastrophic wildfires or how to protect your home and family can be found online at readyforwildfire.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
After decades of battling neglect and red tape, and 9 years since the John Haynes Memorial Veterans Hall was closed and subsequently torn down, construction began today on the rebuild of the beloved hall. Lisa Music reports.
At the unofficial groundbreaking ceremony for the new John Haynes Memorial Veterans Hall, local veterans and supporters shared what the day meant to them after years of waiting and advocacy.
I'm Tom Patilla. I'm a past commander of the post, and this is the end of a 20-year battle with the county to have our building fixed or replaced. So it's finally been demolished, and we're going to get a new building. What else? I mean, it's the end of a long struggle to have a really good vets hall. So it's not only for us vets, but it's for the community. Yeah. And that's what I love about this project.
My name's Jim Truitt, and I've been with this post for many years. Tom and I probably been together on this project for many, many years.
89, I think.
Yeah. And yeah, we're super happy that it's happening.
You were here early in your chair with the plans for this vets hall with your golden shovel.
Yeah.
You've been waiting, not just today, but for a while, yes?
That's true. Yeah, and it's been a long time coming, but looks like it's happening, so I'm a happy guy.
Vietnam veteran Jeff Hadeen reflected on the hall's legacy as a vital community space, recalling early PTSD outreach efforts in the 1990s and expressing gratitude for the county's support, especially that of Supervisor Michelle Bushnell.
I'm Jeff Hadeen, and I am actually a resident in Mendocino County, and a part of the importance of this building as the Garberville Veterans Association, which has reached out to a huge community. And we didn't quite realize how big a community we were until the VA decided that PTSD was a true disability that some veterans suffered. And I was in the midst of being treated for a lung condition that stemmed from Vietnam. And they said, "You have PTSD." I was like, "Me? What's wrong with me?"
Wanting Hadeen to seek treatment for PTSD, the VA suggested he go to clinics in Sonoma County. Unable to leave his small child, Hadeen refused, looking for the nearest town. The VA started assessing how many veterans were in the southern Humboldt area.
Okay, let's see how many vets are around Garberville. And they had a computer down there at Fort Miley Hospital, and they said, "Wow, in a 50-mile radius of Garberville, there are 5,000 registered veterans of the Armed Services of America. We'll bring people up. You just put an advertisement out in your local papers and stuff, and on the radio, and we'll get a group of people from Eureka and a group of people from San Francisco Veterans Hospital, and we'll come up and talk about this." And we had this meeting, and there were so many vets who showed up that we filled the hall. We had to put speakers on the two entrances. We had people all over the lawns listening to this presentation.
Since that first meeting, Hedin has called the John Haynes Memorial Veterans Hall home, joining his fellow vets in a decades-long battle with the county over deferred maintenance.
And pretty soon, we were putting ladders up at night, getting up on the roof and daubing around little bits of
blackjack,
yes, all over the roof to try to stop the leaks that were coming in, etc. And we had to be clandestine because of county requirements for workman's comp and everything else. And that was a part of the issue that stood between a contract here and the future of this hall.
Though at times the effort to get the county to follow through on their promises has been contentious, Hedin expressed appreciation for the hard work of all the county officials that worked together to make this project a reality.
The county worked hard. They really did. It became clear that even Mike Wilson, you know, who was opposed to rebuilding here, made a wonderful description of county need and saying, at least for step one, let's get the vets in a building downtown and have that flag up there on the main street of town and have a presence that's going to see to it that town gets buffed up enough that the tourists coming through look around and start looking for a parking place so they can have lunch here. And they worked hard figuring out how to get the financing together. So, a shout really has to be made for Michelle Bushnell above all. She really carried the ball and hit a lot of resistance. She was packing that ball, but she managed to get it to the start line. Let's hope the finish line is within the year.
And today, Wednesday, May 28th, 2025, the contractor broke ground at the corner of Locust and Conger. The orange fencing around the construction site, a sign of welcomed progress. Reporting for KMUD News, I'm Lisa Music.
In March, the Louis D. Brandeis Center for Human Rights Under Law, in partnership with Jewish on Campus, filed a complaint with Cal Poly Humboldt, alleging violations of Civil Rights Act of 1964. The complaint outlines instances of verbal and physical harassment, exclusion, and abuse directed at Jewish students on campus. In quote, not only did the Cal Poly Humboldt administration refuse to prosecute brazen, violent acts of anti-Semitism, but they allowed their students to be victimized over and over, offering them nothing but a callous disregard for the continued harassment, end quote. Said Hon Kenneth L. Marcus, chairman of the Brandeis Center and the former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Education who ran the Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights, the office that investigates these complaints during two administrations. In quote, we hope this investigation will force Cal Poly to stop sweeping anti-Semitism under the rug, and it will serve as a sign to all universities. Indifference to bigotry and hatred will not be tolerated, end quote. According to the complaint, Jewish students were repeatedly targeted, forced out of certain areas on campus, and subjected to ongoing anti-Semitic behavior. The allegations highlight a pattern of discrimination and hostility that the students endured on campus grounds. One instance happened when anti-Israel campus protesters threw fake blood on Jewish students and vandalized campus property with anti-Semitic slurs. The Brandeis Center mentioned this in their press release. In quote, instead of addressing the blatant anti-Semitism on campus, Cal Poly's administration allegedly put the onus on Jewish students, encouraging them to hide their identity to avoid being targeted. The Brandeis Center mentioned this in their press release. In quote, instead of addressing the blatant anti-Semitism on campus, Cal Poly's administration allegedly put the onus on Jewish students, encouraging them to hide their identity to avoid being targeted. In one instance, a Cal Poly student approached Chabad, a Jewish student group that was tabling at a club fair, and began shouting that the Jewish students were baby killers, genocide supporters, and land stealers. The student grabbed items off the table and put his body in front of Chabad Station, scaring off other students and physically blocking them from approaching, and inserted himself between the rabbi and students who were engaged in discussion. Instead of reprimanding the assailant for the disruptive behavior or intervening in the encounter, the associate dean for student life told Jewish students that they should pack up and leave the fair. In another instance, after a ritual item was stolen from Jewish students, the administration told the Jewish students that they should take additional steps to avoid further theft. End quote. These are two examples the Brandeis Center mentioned where they feel the university encouraged Jewish students to ignore the harassment and retreat. In the press release, there is also mention of pushing for other universities to adopt the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition of anti-Semitism, with examples to its non-discrimination and anti-bullying policies. The IHRA definition considers certain cases of anti-Zionist and anti-Israel criticism as anti-Semitism. Other ongoing investigations brought on by Brandeis Center complaints include Wellesley and the University of Southern California, while settlement agreements have been reached with other schools, including the Sunny, New Paltz, and the University of Illinois. KMUD is working to get you more information on this story later this week. Mendocino County Sheriff's Office has released more information on a shooting that occurred late last week on the Mendocino coast. According to MCSOs, on May 22, 2025, at approximately 10:28 p.m., they responded to a reported shooting in the 17,000 block of North Highway 1, Fort Bragg, California. The victim, 23-year-old Jeremy Segura, claimed he was shot by his roommate, 39-year-old Say Someone Manyphone. Upon arrivals, deputies found Jeremy, who was unharmed but unsure if Say Someone was still inside the residence. After making several announcements and finding no response, deputies learned Say Someone's vehicle had left the area. During a search of the residence, evidence of a discharged firearm was found. A search warrant was obtained and further evidence confirmed that Say Someone was responsible for a violent assault with a firearm. Despite efforts, Say Someone was not found during the initial search. The incident was deemed isolated and there was no ongoing public threat. On May 23, 2025, at approximately 6:24 p.m., the Fort Bragg Police Department received information on Say Someone's whereabouts and detained him in the 300 block of North Main Street. He was arrested and booked into the Mendocino County Jail on charges of assault with a firearm and use of a firearm during the commission of a felony. He is being held on a $100,000 bail. The investigation is ongoing, and anyone with information is asked to contact the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office at 707-463-4086. Again, that is 707-463-4086, or anonymously, the 707-234-2100. The Sheriff's Office thanks the Fort Bragg Police Department for their assistance. The Interior Department considers offshore drilling leases along Mendocino Coast. KZYX's Elise Cox reports.
The Mendocino Coast is facing the threat of offshore oil drilling and an assembly bill that aims to reduce compensation for some homeowners with rooftop solar is advancing in the state legislature. Monday was Memorial Day, a day when families of the fallen gather in graveyards around the country and around the county for ceremonies of remembrance. Frank Hartzell, editor and publisher of the Mendocino Coast News, has been chronicling the stories of local veterans. He attended the ceremony in Fort Bragg.
Can you describe what the scene was like?
The service was a very powerful 5 minutes of remembrance, presentations of colors, a prayer by the chaplain, gun salute by the honor guard and taps. The power, though, exuded from all the flags extending from every direction in Rose Memorial Cemetery as a crowd of about 100 people gathered to hear the American Legion VFW service. There was a woman who came up from San Francisco, and she was decorating the grave of her father with the pictures of her grandfather and grandmother, both who served in World War I. And that was in, there's a special veterans area of the Fort Bragg Rose Memorial Cemetery there that have filled up right away, so they're all over now. But one is just all veterans with a giant flag that was at half-mast for Memorial Day, and where the service was held.
You can read more of Frank's reporting at MendocinoCoast.news. In other news, the Department of Interior has issued a request for information for a new offshore oil and gas leasing program. KZYX News spoke with Richard Charter, a senior fellow at the Ocean Foundation, about what is at stake.
The Mendocino Coast, for the first time ever, really, is facing offshore oil drilling. Federal leases that would be issued by the Interior Department for offshore oil rigs, including at the far southern end of the Mendocino Coast, within the new National Marine Sanctuary, within the boundaries of a marine sanctuary. We've never seen that before, ever.
Why is this happening?
That is a very good question. A lot of people will have to ask somebody with a higher pay grade than me that will probably be found sitting in the White House right now. But basically, I think the oil industry has figured out that if they can get leases off the California coast in areas that have been protected for 50 years, now they may not have another chance. In other words, people here have realized that our entire coastal dependent economy is hooked up to the, you know, ecological well-being of this coast. And so it's a crime of opportunity as I see it.
And what mechanism are they using to get these leases?
Well, the Interior Department periodically, every 5 years, as a matter of fact, does what's called the five-year offshore oil and gas leasing program. And at the end of April, they issued what's called a request for information. And that request for information ignored an action that was taken back in January by the Biden administration that had withdrawn, actually, the entire Pacific Coast from any further consideration permanently ever for offshore drilling. And the Trump administration is instead just ignoring that and pretending it doesn't exist, even though there is no mechanism really for Trump to reverse that. We've tested that in court in Alaska with an Obama withdrawal of Bristol Bay, richest salmon fishery on the planet. And the court said a subsequent president can't undo a withdrawal by a previous president.
But that's not what POTUS-47 believes. This is what he said the day after Biden protected the Pacific coast.
It's ridiculous. I'll unban it immediately. I will unban it. I have the right to unban it immediately. What's he doing? Why is he doing it? You know, we have something that nobody else has. I mean, nobody has to the extent we have it. And
What recourse do people on the Mendocino Coast have if this news is something that's upsetting to them?
Well, there is a public comment period running right now. It lasts until the 16th of June. I think you will see some response on the part of your county. Obviously, the state of California, the state of Oregon, the state of Washington are all responding. And if individuals want to respond, I can give you a, you know, hook up to a website where they can do that very easily.
The website Charter is referring to is savemycoast.org. That's savemycoast.org. The Assembly Committee on Utilities and Energy and the Appropriations Committee have passed AB 942, a bill that requires homes with existing solar panels and solar power contracts to switch to a new energy metering scheme if they are sold. The new agreement, known as NEM3, reduces the amount homeowners are paid for the energy they provide to the grid. The bill, sponsored by Assemblymember Lisa Calderon of Los Angeles, is supported by utilities, utility-affiliated groups, and the California Wind Energy Association. It's opposed by 160 groups, ranging from schools and churches to doctors and nonprofits. It's expected to be voted on by the full state assembly as early as today, Tuesday. The California Solar and Storage Association is leading a rally against the bill outside the state capitol on 11th Street, starting at noon. For KZYX News, I'm Elise Cox. For all our local stories, visit kzyx.org.
In national news, National Nuclear Security Administration holds hearing on plan to expand production of plutonium triggers for nuclear weapons. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
The National Nuclear Security Administration, or NNSA, is planning to expand the production of plutonium pits, the explosive trigger of nuclear bombs that makes them go boom. After being sued by organizations including Nuclear Watch New Mexico and the Bay Area group Tri-Valley Cares, the NNSA held what it calls a scoping meeting to hear from the public about the plan. It was a rare opportunity for people to comment on the environmental impacts of nuclear weapons production, and the people weighed in. Patrick Bosold said his message to the National Nuclear Security Administration is simple. Don't do it, just don't.
You cannot discuss the environmental impact of pit production without discussing the environmental impact of what's going to happen if they ever get used. And if you say, we're never going to use them, then don't make them.
Opponents of the plan say plutonium pits are poison with a radioactive half-life of 24,000 years, making safe storage tricky. And they say there's another problem, the specter of nuclear proliferation. Mary Olson is with the Gender and Radiation Impact Project.
I want to remind the NNSA that half the world has now signed a treaty, the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, which affirms that all of these activities go against a shared future and are therefore in the category with chemical and biological weapons, illegal. I encourage NNSA as parents and grandparents to work with our government to achieve this country adopting the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons.
Joanne Sweeney also spoke against the plan. She's with the group Nuclear Watch South, based in Georgia.
And this whole idea that it's a law to have 80 new plutonium pits is ridiculous. That law needs to be changed, just like slavery. It's wrong. It's wrong-minded. It's very exploitive. It's very dangerous to the well-being of our country.
Several of the speakers talked about the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, a treaty aimed at halting the spread of nuclear weapons with the goal of achieving complete nuclear disarmament. John Burroughs went into a bit of detail, citing the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty's Article 6.
Production of pits for new design warheads on a new delivery system, the Sentinel ICBM, and on submarine-based ballistic missiles qualifies as nuclear arms racing. The United States is obligated to pursue negotiations to cease such arms racing at an early date.
Tuesday's scoping meeting was the first of two. The second takes place Wednesday, May 28th. Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley, and thanks to our reporters, Lauren Schmidt, Lisa Music, Elise Cox, David Hummel, Teresa Juarez-Bianasca, and Christopher Martinez. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.